Blog Talk Radio.
UJS Radio is not intended for anyone under the age of 18 years old. We reserve the right to say whatever the fuck we want to say because we believe in free speech. And if you do not believe in free speech...
Get the fuck out of here, you stupid cocksucker!
We kill the men, we kill the women, we kill the children, we kill the babies, we kill the blind, we kill the crippled, we kill the crazy, we kill the faggots, we kill the lesbians. I said, God damn it, we kill them all!
And one night, a John set me on fire. That wicked fantasy was to see a child burned to death. And after that, I was just left in a garbage can to die.
Try taking some of these dangerous chemicals out of the food and environment and see if there's a turnaround. At least do something instead of ignoring it and increasing the danger to us.
I was a school teacher in my parish school, and I caught a priest molesting a child. They were going to allow this man to remain near the children, and sadly, he's still in a parish today.
There is absolutely no sexual overtone within this procedure, according to the traditional rabbis that perform it. Absolutely.
Sexual or not, you still had a baby's penis in your mouth. That's just...
Okay, have a pleasant day.
Welcome to the Church of Reality.
That's when everything began to change, you know what I'm saying? When the gangs really had started kind of, you know, coming back up and all that type of stuff. And then I had a brother, like I said, who was a year older than I, man, who ended up getting caught up, you know, and sucked into the gangs. And then he was brutally murdered back in 1983. And, again, like I said, man, this type of stuff was going on almost every day, you know. And at that particular time, I was going to high school on the north side of Chicago, Lincoln Park, and I had to ride past Cabrini. I had to ride past Cabrini every day. And Cabrini, man, I mean, we had to duck on the buses, you know what I'm saying, just so we wouldn't get shot, man, you know. And, yeah, and you know what the thing is, man, you become immune to that stuff, you know what I'm saying,
exactly.
The shooting and all that type of stuff, man. You can be walking down the streets and hear shots, and it's like, hey, you just keep on walking, you know.
Yeah.
But it was rough, brother. I must say, man, it was rough. But like I said, when you get used to it, it becomes nothing. You become immune to it. You know what I'm saying? Like it's an everyday way of life. You know what I'm saying? But it was rough. And Trey would tell you, man, a lot of our buddies, a lot of our homies, man, not here today, you know, because they got involved in gangs and was either, you know, gunned down or now doing life in prison and different things like that. But you know, I just man, I'm just happy and blessed to be able to say, man, I was one by the grace of God who was able to survive that. I mean, I had to, you know, hit a few walls, hit my head, you know, up against the wall a couple of times to get to where I am today. But by the grace of God, man, you know I'm here. I mean, for Trey Wood and I to even be on the phone with you, brother, I can't even explain this to you. You know, you're talking about somebody, man, who was out there, in that work, man. And here we are, you know, 20 years later, brother, on the phone talking to you, trying to come up with a solution, you know, to, man, how can this change, man? What can we do to help this change? You know what I'm saying? So, but it was rough, man. It was rough. And like I said, man, even for me, right now, man, I live in the West Suburban, man, and I can't imagine, you know, my kids growing up in that type of environment that I grew up in. You know, yeah.
That's real. Yeah, that was episode 16 of The Church of Reality. That was in 2012, Chicago was the gang capital pretty much of the world, the murder capital of the world, I should say. It had more murders than the entire warring country of Afghanistan, and that's just one city in America. And the man you were listening to was OG China Joe. You might have seen him in an interview in Gangland, a popular series about street gangs. He was one of the leaders of the Vice Lords in the city of Chicago, and we were trying to have some type of ceasefire on air. Too many people were getting killed, and, you know, we wanted to do our part. So, you know what I'm saying, the homie Trey Wood called upon OG China Joe, and we had, you know, Tony Norris up in here, Tony's brother, you know, just trying to figure out how we're going to stop the violence. That was episode 16. Tonight we're on episode 33. And I'm going to bring on my co-host, Elaine. Elaine, you there?
I'm here.
Yeah, Elaine. Yeah, that was OG China Joe. That was from episode 16. I was just letting people know, what that clip was about. Tonight's kind of a best of the best. But we also have a guest on tonight, Elaine, a wonderful woman named Eugenie. She is from she's actually the founder and the executive director of the Genocide Survivor Support Network. And I'm going to let her talk a little bit about it. I think this is her right here, right now. Eugenie, is that you?
No, this is Mary Neal.
Mary, okay. How you doing, Mary? How you doing?
I'm doing great, thank you.
Well, while we're waiting,
I just want to say that this group is a wonderful idea, and I support it 100%. This is the group where people get together to stop Depo-Provera. Is that right?
Well, Elaine's a spokeswoman for that. She's here with us, which, you know, we're always down to speak on that because that is a serious issue. But no, actually, our guest tonight is going to be a woman who founded the support. It's the Genocide Survivor Support Network. She was actually a survivor of genocide, I believe, in Rwanda. She's going to be calling in, and then we're also going to be playing clips of some of our best moments on the show. Different things that we're putting together. So, and you were a guest
Exciting.
On the show too. You were a guest on the show.
Oh yes, I was. Is this Prez?
Yeah, this is Prez. How you doing?
Hey, Prez. It's wonderful
hey,
to be with you again. Thank you.
Yeah.
No problem.
Yes, absolutely. Hi, Elaine.
I believe our guest is here.
Okay.
I'm going to bring her on real quick. Thanks for calling in, Mary. We'll try to get with you a little bit later. Elaine, this is our guest. I'm going to bring her on, I believe. How do you say your name? I don't want to mispronounce it.
Eugenie.
Okay. I think I did good then. I that's what I announced you as. Welcome to the show. My name is Prez, and my co-host is the wonderful Miss Elaine Riddick.
Oh, thank you. It's nice to be with you.
It's my pleasure.
Thank you. Well, we want to know, first of all, you yourself survived genocide, true?
Yes, that's correct.
And at what age were you when this was going on? I mean, did you have to, was it going on for a period of years, or can you describe it to our listeners?
Yeah, I was 23 years old. I was 8 months pregnant. It was my first child. And the genocide only lasted for 3 months, but killed about a million people. And that happened in between April and July of 1994, so almost 20 years ago.
That was Rwanda, right?
Yes, that was Rwanda. So we had two main ethnic groups. The Hutus were about 85% of the population, the majority, and the Tutsis were about 15% of the population. The majority tried pretty much to wipe out the minority.
And that is just a horrible thing. We hear this, I mean, it's going on in Burma, it's going on in Syria, it's going on in different countries. I didn't hear nothing about, I'm going to be honest with you, I did not hear nothing about Rwanda until Don Cheadle's movie Hotel Rwanda came out. And the media just didn't cover it. Why do you think that is, Eugenie? Why does the media not cover these sorts of things?
You know, I don't know. I think sometimes the media makes assumption that people might have no interest in certain part of the world, which I think is totally wrong. But it's not just Rwanda. I mean, who knows about Congo and a few other issues and, you know, conflict going on. You know, how often do we hear about Sudan? How often do we hear about the Central Republic? So it's really it's been a trend in the media. I'm not entirely sure why, but one thing that is that we know is that they knew it was going on. So it's not something that happened behind closed doors. It's not, there were no gas chambers. It happened in the open, in daytime. So if anyone wanted to see it or cover it, it was very easy to do so.
It's horrible, horrible. And my co-host, Elaine, you know, there was a thing that was going on in the United States that's still going on. It's called eugenics. Are you familiar with eugenics?
Kind of, yes. I know the concept.
Yes, yes. And they sterilized Elaine. And that's another form of population control. But what they were doing with you guys, it's bad either way, whether it's cancer, whether it's chemicals in the food, whether it's forced sterilizations. But when they just take machine guns and mow people down, like you said, a million people in a little over 3 months, I can't even imagine what you have seen. I can't even...
You're talking about... Actually, this is not... You will be lucky to be shot. You know, this is my cities, not no hand grenades, no bombs, nothing. It's somebody taking my city and hacking someone to death.
That's awful.
It's hard to describe it.
I can't even imagine. And you were pregnant at this time. How did you survive, Eugenie?
In the middle of the whole madness, there were some people who tried their best to save lives, and I'm alive because a family took me in. Somebody took pity on me, and you know they just decided to do the right thing. A few survivors. For the two people who lived in Rwanda before the genocide, I think around maybe at least 80% of them got killed. So there are very few survivors. And anyone who survived, most of them, they survived because somebody tried to keep you alive. It's too hard to hide for 3 months. It's very hard. And in my case, there was a family that hid me, and when I was discovered, another person bargained again pleaded with her mother to keep me there. And by the end of the genocide, the house where I have been kicked, the person who was running that house was not around. I had made a deal with him that he will shoot me and the baby, and they, in exchange of cooking for him. But then when the genocide, when the city of Kigali fell in the hands of the group, the Rwandan Patriotic Front, an armed group that was fighting to end the genocide, he wasn't around to kill me. That's the reason why I survived.
And thankfully you did, and so many didn't. Now, there's also a genocide going on in Darfur. Is that still taking place?
Yes, it is, unfortunately.
And it's been going on since what? At least 10 plus years, no?
Since, I believe, 2006.
So close to a decade.
Yes.
Can you, I know this is painful for you, But I want our listeners to really get the grasp of what's going on. The ones that are living in their nice, comfortable homes that think they have nothing to worry about or should have nothing to fear, can you please describe some of the things that you saw during this genocide, if you can?
I don't know if they can tell my kid, but I think I can explain this because I have to do this very often, unfortunately, but it's important that people understand. The genocide started, there was a campaign. These type of crimes don't just happen overnight. There was a campaign to demonize the Tutsis that lived in Rwanda before the genocide. And the campaign was run by the media, extremist groups, and everybody who was in the country kept silent. So nobody intervened, nobody did anything to really stop this from happening. So over time, some people bought into the propaganda that was going on. So by the time the genocide started, you have a population that was almost ready for anything. And when that the genocide started, the only thing that the government, so the president was killed, and that became the excuse to start the genocide. Those who had planned the genocide, they told the mass population that the president had been killed by Tutsis, therefore you have to kill every Tutsi who lives in this country. Revenge, right? So the government ordered people to kill their neighbors. Mm. It said, you know who they are. And, of course, they had a list of people. You have to understand that in Rwanda, there wasn't no specific area where the Tutsis lived and the Hutu lived. We were mixed. It's like any neighborhood you take here in the U.S., you find an Italian family and then, you know, an Irish family. It was that diverse. So you find, like, a home of Tutsi that is surrounded by 10, 15, 20 homes of Hutus. And when the government said that they have to kill the Tutsis, they told them to kill everyone, not spare the children or the old ladies. But they did not specify how they kill people. So it was up to the guys in each neighborhood to figure out how to kill their own Tutsis. And they were very territorial, so you couldn't go from what neighborhood A to kill people in neighborhood B. They would say, no, these are ours. You can come here and to kill them. So the people themselves, they decided which home to go to. They woke up every morning the same way we woke up going to work. They organized, and they decided which home to go to first. Once they get to the house, they decided how to kill the people in the house. And it's not just killing people. It is torturing people. In the end, they knew people would have to be killed, but it's the process that mattered for them. So you will find that they will rape the women, they will rape the little girls, and they will rape them in front of the husband just for the mental torture. If you are lucky enough, they may offer you that you will pay, and if you pay the money, they will not kill you using machetes. They can shoot you. So depending on where you were, the group that came specifically to where you were, whether you could negotiate with them or not, your final hour was determined based on what time of the day, for example. If they caught people in the morning, the people were found in the morning searches, it was a quick death that they received because the guys needed to move on and find other people before it get so hot during the day. But the people were caught in the evening. They will torture them more because they say, we spend the whole day under this hot sun looking for you. In other words, we wasted energy trying to find you. So you have to pay for this. And that comes in terms of torture. So the ugliness of the genocide was that everyone who encountered death, it was different from the other person. Although there are trends in the way they raped the women, in the way they infected women with with HIV and kind of made sure they don't kill those women. And, of course, they knew the women would die within the next 3 to 4 years. At that time, nobody knew that this is really what had happened until we started seeing people dying. But the method of killing involved hacking people, not necessarily hitting someone when they knew it would be quick, but killing them softly and painfully, torturing them. Depending on where you were, people lived near the rivers, for example, were thrown in those rivers. They would just tie their hands behind their back and just drown them, basically. People who lived near an overpass, for example, that overpass got used. They would just lower them head first. Sometimes people took pleasure in taking infants, putting them in sacks and just, and they would use the war just to kill them. Some people were thrown in toilets alive. Some people were buried alive. Some people were taught to dig their own graves. It's beyond anything that we know. It's frightening. Personally, I did see people being killed, although at the time when I saw that, I didn't realize they were being killed because I've never seen anyone being killed by machete. It just didn't register. But I did see the people who have been killed afterward. I did witness somebody being, a group of women being marched and being told, okay, so you work with us and you can kill us in our home, because the way they were found, the way they were hiding, and people recognized them and they said, okay, let's go home and kill us home. But also the stories of when people were killed, they were put in mass graves. So when you go to a mass grave that has 5,000 people, 10,000 people, and because we had no way of knowing who is who, and you're looking for your relatives, like in my case, we were looking for my sister, they have to bring everybody out. And those dead bodies, they tell a story of how they got there. You can see that. You can see the blows on their head. I don't know. Like, the movie Hotel Rwanda did a fair good job, but if somebody made a movie about the genocide, the way it happened, I don't think anybody would ever go to see the movie. And that is how bad it was. Everything that you can possibly imagine took place in Rwanda.
I can't, again, I thank you for sharing that with our listeners. It's important that they fully understand what's going on around the world. And it's happening right now in several different countries. I know it's happening in Burma, which I believe is now called Myanmar, formerly known as Burma. We all know about Syria, but Darfur is still going through this almost a decade later. And there's several other countries. There's some in South America going through it. And it's important that people understand there's many, many forms of genocide. There's self-genocide, with the street gangs. There's chemical genocide with the stuff that they put in the food, water, and air. And then there's warfare genocide, like what you're speaking of, just what they would call, what the media would call an ethnic cleansing. It's just horrible. It's just horrible. I commend you for the work you're doing. I really do.
Thank you.
Thank you. No problem. Your organization, the Genocide Survivors, what's it called?
Genocide Survivors Support Network.
Okay. When did you start that? What year did you start that network?
I started the work in 2010 because nobody was doing it. And I have run into, I've known survivors who came here. I've listened to many stories, and I just realized that it wasn't being done. I tried to contact a couple of organizations, but it was different from what their mission had set up to do. And I just said, you know, I may as well just try to do it because I don't think anybody's going to do it. And so that's what I've been doing since then. And the work involved helping survivors rebuild their lives. And that entails helping them with having access to services such as immigration. We know how laws are complicated in this country. So try to imagine someone coming here and they have to deal with immigration and they don't speak the language. It's not like anything is going to be explained to you. The government won't, they can't provide you a lawyer. They can't provide you an interpreter. They won't even give you documents that are translated in your language. You are on your own and you have to prove your case. So my work, I help survivors have access to legal representation. Basically, find pro bono lawyers through large law firms or other organizations to help to work with me so that these people can have representation. They have gone through a lot, and with complicated systems like immigration, there is no way that somebody can come from a place like Rwanda and go through this alone. And they're coming with all the traumas they went through. I also do a lot of work with their trauma counseling, trying to figure out how somebody enrolls in college. And we've been fortunate that some colleges that have been giving scholarships to some of the survivors who qualify for those scholarships. We have the grades and are able, ready to go to college. But the need is greater, and we need help more than ever.
Can I say something? I'm so touched by what you're saying. I'm so sorry that it happened. And I can't figure out why our government, hello?
Yes.
Oh, you know, these governments, man, I don't know what's going on with them. I can't understand where was the United Nations in all of this. I mean, how can a government allow these military people come in and kill people with machetes? I do believe that what was the name of your country again?
Rwanda.
Yeah, I believe that I've seen some pictures and I posted some pictures of what was going on in that country. Just last week or week before, I remember posting something about that, how they were going in and they, like, this pregnant lady. I couldn't understand how they could kill all these people like that with machetes, as you said. I mean, my God, what is going on with these people? You know, I just can't understand it, and I don't understand as a survivor of this, I mean, I can't see how you survive just by seeing all this stuff. I mean, this is really, really horrific. These are crimes that's committed against humanity. You know, what kind of world do we live in and what kind of governments do we have that would allow this to happen to their people? This is unacceptable, totally unacceptable. And until we people come together and start voicing our opinion about this, it's going to happen here. It is happening all over the world. We need to stop these crimes. We need to stand up and start fighting as a people and say we're not going to accept this anymore. This is really, really unacceptable.
Well, you know, thank you for your words. The problem that I see is that a lot of times some of these crimes have become accepted. You know, it's no longer upsetting, outraging to hear that women are being raped in war. And it's almost like it's another new weapon, you know, that was discovered. So we kind of like have to expect that it's going to happen. And that's what it concerns me even more, because we seem to have lost the belief in the holiness of life. Like taking somebody's life has become so easy, you know. Depending on where we are, we can think, okay, so we're safe. But this Rwanda happened 20 years ago. If you think about 1945, 1943, 1939, what was the Nazi doing in Europe? You know, German was a very educated, people were educated. It's not that, you know, they didn't know what they were doing. The people kept quiet. It wasn't, you know, this is an issue. It's a threat to everyone. Poor, rich, educated, uneducated, it's all the same. We're all facing the same issue. Something is happening in humanity, and it is happening in front of our eyes, and somehow we're not reading ourselves, allowing ourselves to see it for what it is.
Well, I see it for
what it is. Does it make any sense?
I see it for what it is, you know, and this is just awful, and it's part of the depopulation syndrome that they have in here, and I am so sorry again that it happened to, you know, that you had to live through that, and you know, and especially the women. I mean, I know they're terrified, you know, just, you know, not knowing. I mean, how can somebody say, go kill your neighbor? You know, and it's restricted to each neighborhood. So everybody in the neighborhood is killing their neighbor. And each neighborhood, as you said, people are not allowed to go to another neighborhood. This is criminal. This is scary. It's just damn scary. Excuse my curse word, but I'm mad.
It is scary, but also I should mention that it's not just that people, it's neighborhood. It's these are people you grew up with. These are people who, you know, who came over, who your best friends. You know, these are people you went to school with, you played soccer with, you know. And in terms of how, and you know, the betrayal of just the fact that the genocide was being committed by your next door neighbor, who knows very well that you're not a threat to them, you did not kill the president, obviously. But and it wasn't just about killing people, by the way. It just became that they would come in the house, kill the people, kill the pets, destroy the home completely. Anything that is connected, related to this family, has to be completely, you know, decimated. And the degree of hatred involved in, you know, in the genocide was just like, it was beyond reason. And the other thing that I wanted to add, too, it's that you asked, Aria, like, what was the UN and, you know, and why this happened? There are things that are not done because morally they're wrong. You know, you just can't do that. You know, at the moral level, it's wrong. Now, when I read the account of some of the people who took part in the killing, one of the things that they mentioned was that, well, look, we used to go to church, and different congregations, they were the ones between us and God. And when the genocide started, they did not tell us not to do it.
Mm.
So in some ways, by their silence allowed, gave almost like a pass, like a moral pass to the people who were committing the genocide to go ahead and do it. Because, well, maybe this is not going really against the, you know, we're not violating any moral code here. Because if if God doesn't want these people dead, God should express that he doesn't want them dead. Through the same channels, we get the message, you know. So it's not just the government that was silent. You also got the faith communities, and there were plenty of churches in Rwanda. Some of them openly took part in the killings. In fact, a lot of groups of people who were killed, they were killed in churches by the same people. They all attended the same church, and one group came in, killed people inside the church. They all had been killing.
Right in the church.
And the Catholic Church. So we have a lot, many churches that are now memorials. And we have a priest that took place and you know, took part in the killings. They grabbed the guns, and they went out, and they killed people. So this is a, you know, complete breakdown of anything that we know that should never, ever happen in the community. So there is the silence from the church. There is a silence from many different embassies that were present in Rwanda. There's a silence from many expatriates who lived in Rwanda who got evacuated as the movie, again, portrayed them. And there is silence from the neighbors, the neighboring countries. You know, there is silence from the African Union or African community. And it goes just further and further. I always say, you know, if my house is on fire, I'm expecting my neighbor at least to call 911. And nobody called for us.
Thanks. I'm so sorry.
Yeah, me too. Again, you know, a lot of us have seen things in our lives, but very few of us have seen what you have seen. And I commend you not only for surviving, but for helping people who have been through what you've been through get through it the best that they can. Because I imagine there's a lot of people that come to your network. Do you guys take in children at all?
I mean, most of the survivors, so this happened about 20 years ago, and there were some survivors that have come to me. They were very young children during the genocide, and it's, you know, some of the issues they're struggling with, you know, are just mind-boggling. I'll give you an example. Because we didn't have pictures, because there's nothing salvaged from the home, to listen to someone telling you that they don't remember, they remember that the mother used to wear like a red, you know, T-shirt, but they don't remember what, you know, what her hands looked like. They don't remember what the face looked like, or the, you know, anything that you could connect to your mother and knowing that you lived with that person. It's just the memories that people have from the genocide, from things they witnessed, or the memories that are missing. It is something that you know, it's very hard to recover from. And of course, some of them, the ones who were older, they're now beginning to have their own children. And that's the second generation is also coming in the world, to parents who are still severely traumatized and never received therapy. And we really don't know what to tell our kids. What do you tell your child when there is just you and no one in the family? You know, they will grow up and find out that everybody else, you're supposed to have four grandparents. You're supposed to have aunts and uncles, you know. We don't know. We don't know what to tell our kids. We just don't know.
Well, you know, I don't know how, again, you survived this. And I know it had, I know it was really, really, it's a really, really traumatic experience. And I just don't know what to say, you know, but if you need some family, you can, I mean, I'm willing to be a sister.
Thank you.
I mean, I am honestly from the bottom of my heart, you know, and you can join me on Facebook. And here, you know, we're here to heal. Have you ever heard of the Rebecca Project?
Not so much.
Okay, well, you know, I think that's something that I would like for you to get involved with, because the Rebecca Project, that's what they are here for. They're here to help, you know, people, you know, that have been experienced traumatic experiences such as yours. And I would love to introduce you to some people there, and we can put something together and we can help each other. How would you like that?
I would love to be involved. I would love to find out
more.
I would love to figure out what else we can do. I mean,
we're
going to
work on it. We're going to work on it. And, you know, I'll make sure that I give you the information at the end of the show if you're willing to hold on. And, you know, because you're not alone anymore. You know.
And
you know, you are not
it.
Alone anymore. I mean, you've just been adopted. And I hope all our listeners
you.
Out there agree with me. You are not alone anymore. You have family here. And we're going to give
you
all the support that we can.
That is so wonderful to hear. One of the issues that we faced when we came to this land, isolation is number one.
Mm-hmm.
Just moving and living, and nobody knows what happened to you.
Right.
And there's no way to explain to people, because on the outside we all look so wonderful, you know. But we have our limits. Nobody can see the nightmares if you have them.
I do.
The thing that you can't see, and we have a lot as a human being to share. I remember when I discussed to a group of women, my background's in social work, and I worked with a group of homeless women, and they always assumed that I could not understand what being a single mother is, and I could not understand what raising babies was like, until I told them, look, you know, I delivered my own baby in the middle of the genocide. We're hiding. You know, this is not what I planned, but she's alive. But, you know, I had my own way to come into motherhood and raising a child. And it's different from yours, but there are some commonalities in the way we experience life. We experience loss and grief and a lot of things that happen to us. So we can help each other. If we can heal, get together, heal each other, we can heal each other.
And that's what I would like to help you to do. I know we can't make it all go away, but we would like to let you know that you do have some support out here now. I mean that from the bottom of my heart.
Thank you.
You have support out here, and I promise you. I think we our prayers have your phone number. You know, because
yeah,
I would need that to
I'm
get.
I'm about
I,
to email her your number right now, Elaine.
Yeah, email her my number so I can make sure that somebody listens to her story, and somebody put some help out there for her. And you're gonna have to keep in touch with me. But anyway, I think Prez is gonna email you my information right now. Okay.
Yes.
Yeah, and again, I am so sorry. My heart is overwhelmed. And, you know, if I was near you, I would give you a great big hug so you can feel, you know, that you do have somebody. And I am so sorry again. And I'm going to do my best to help you heal.
Thank you so much.
And anytime you want to talk, anything you need, if I have it, it's yours.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
That's as real
thank
as it
you.
Gets. And I want to thank you for coming on our show and sharing, you know what I'm saying, what you went through with our audience. I really appreciate you.
Thank you so much for the opportunity.
And before you go, once again, what is your network and the website?
The network is Genocide Survivors Support Network, and you can find us on www.genocidegsn.global.org, or you can type in Genocide Survivors Support Network in a search engine, and you will end up on our organization. And perhaps you can add the link to your website, just in case people are not able to find it. But again, it's www.gssnglobal.org.
Make sure to go check out the website and definitely support the victims of genocide and the people who survived, like our guest, Yevgeny. Again, I can't thank you enough for coming on the show and sharing this with everybody. You take care of yourself, and we'll get in touch with you real soon, all right?
Thank you so much.
Thank
Have a good
you.
Evening.
All right, take care.
All right. Thanks so much, Elaine. Okay, bye.
That right there, folks, is unfortunately as real as it gets, because, yeah, you're right. You're right, Elaine. You sometimes you got to get hit in the chest with something as real as it gets, and that was as real as it gets, folks. And that possibly could be coming to our front door. In fact, it is in small
it's already here.
Spurts. I mean, as far like I was talking about earlier, the chemical genocide and then the self-genocides, like gang warfare, like we were talking about Chicago, you know, we have more murders than Afghanistan. You know, so people do see that violence here. But we have not yet seen a mass genocide, you know, in the time frame of a few months. I'm talking about millions of people just getting, like she said, hacked to death with machetes, thrown in the rivers with their hands and feet bound, burned alive. I mean, you name it. Men, women, and children. Men having to watch their children and their wives being raped before they are murdered. Man, that shit is just crazy.
It's time for us to wake up, you know, because if we don't, you know, come together, you know, I think that we're going to be seeing something like that, because people, like you say, there is no respect. You know, your neighbor is killing you. People that you grew up with is coming in your home, going in your churches and killing masses of people. We can't have that. You know, we can't have that. So it's time for us to wake up, because, you know, other people are seeing the way we behave here, and you're going to give them permission to come in here and just do the same thing to you, because you have no respect for each other.
No, you're right. No respect.
You know, it's time to wake up. You know,
it is.
I mean, and I can't understand why. You know, she said her president was killed, and that gave the other people, you know, even the government, the ministers or the priests or whomever was in charge of the churches, you know, all these people are coming in there passing these killers guns and machetes and things to kill these people. What
and
kind
Bill
of
Jeff.
World do we live in? I
Bill
think we
Jeff.
Need everybody need to just pray.
Bill Jefferson Clinton was in office and didn't do shit. Our leaders don't care, because you know why? We're not getting resources in Rwanda like we would be in Lebanon or Syria. The reason we go into certain countries like Afghanistan, well, let's look at it. Oil for one, opium and heroin for two, lithium. Afghanistan is like the world's largest exporter of lithium, okay? So we seized all of that, and on top of that, you know, we go into places to get diamonds, to get money, to get oil, to get gold, but we don't go into places that don't have resources for us. Now, Rwanda, most parts of Rwanda probably don't even have running water. So what the hell are we going to do over there? What are we going to develop over there? Our bastard government leaders don't see any value in human life at all, because if they did, they would have stopped over a million people from getting murdered. Now this happened during the span of a little over 3 to 4 months. Bill could have went in there and stopped it all, but he didn't. Obama could have went to defer right now. It's still going on, and stop it immediately, but he's not gonna do it. George Bush could have done it. He didn't care. None of our leaders care. It's important that us as Americans understand. I don't care what walk of life you come from, what religion you are, if you have a religion at all, what race you are. If you don't know by now that our leaders don't give a fuck about human life, then you're a goddamn fool. And it's real shit. But, hey, Elaine, that was a hell of a segment. Thank you for doing that segment with me. That was one of the realest interviews I've ever done. I am happy that I was able to do it with you. I felt very comfortable doing it, and you were part of that, and I appreciate you. This is supposed to be a best of show, and we're gonna get to Mary Neal here in a few minutes. Hang on the line, Mary. First, I'm gonna play part of an interview that I did with a rabbi. This is from episode 2, Rabbi Richman, straight out of New York City, an Orthodox Jewish rabbi who, at one point in time, did a ritual called Mebetza Matah, aka the oral suction, where the rabbi circumcises the young infant boy, then puts the boy's penis into his mouth and sucks the blood out of the boy's penis and gurgles it around in his mouth and spits it into a glass. When I heard about this, it just disgusted me. It's like, why are these? Okay, number one, no child should be forced upon anything until they're old enough to understand what the hell it is, okay, which I'm referring to as religion. If my daughter at the age of 18 or 21 or 15 comes to me and says, Dad, you know what, I want to be a Buddhist, all right, if that's what you want to do, fine, as long as you understand it. But I never force my daughter into that. Now, what they're doing to this baby, they're forcing him not only to torture him, okay, I mean, that's got to be a traumatizing event to get skin cut off your body, but then to molest him. And I was fortunate enough, after calling several rabbis and getting turned down, to get Rabbi Richman to do an interview with me. And this is a few minutes of that interview. Check it out. We'll be right back to talk about it. And then we're going to bring on Mary Neal to talk about some injustices within the police system. So don't go nowhere. Callers, hit the line, 714-409-0548. This is the Church of Reality. We'll be right back shortly.
Department of Health is trying to interfere with that procedure, and many rabbis are upset that the public departments are interfering and getting involved in something which is purely a religious and a spiritual act, and therefore they don't want to change anything.
Now you said there's a big debate going on. Are you for this procedure or against it?
I happen to be, I'm not in favor of the procedure. I think that the halacha, that the Jewish law, could be fulfilled. I use this type of, I don't like the idea that the secular or governmental authorities are entering into the realm of religious practice.
Mm-hmm. But you feel that it should not be done with one's mouth. It should be done with something more sterile.
It should not be done. It would fulfill the requirements of the Jewish law by using the sterile glass pipette. That's my own personal feeling, and my teacher and mentor told me 30 years ago that was his opinion also.
So you've never done that type of procedure then?
I did it earlier than 1982.
You did it earlier. Now, I mean, from a moral standpoint, how did that make you feel, you know, doing that to a child?
I don't know what you mean.
Well, I mean, putting your mouth on the penis of a baby. Wasn't that, didn't you?
There's no sexual or any kind of morality involved here.
I know, but didn't that make you feel a little weird to you know, put a baby's penis into your mouth?
No.
Not at all.
That's what the halacha dictated, and that's the spirit in which it was performed. That's the spirit which is performed by all practitioners today that do matzitsa b'peh. Absolutely no sexual overtones at all.
Yeah, but it's putting a baby's penis into your mouth. Now that I know what this is, I find it very sick. I mean, I commend you for doing the tube thing, but I mean, to put a baby's penis into your mouth?
So you know, you have a whole different orientation.
Yeah, I mean, for the rights of children, that's not right, Rabbi. I mean, you know, that's
how far you want to go. You shouldn't circumcise the baby either without his input.
Well, the baby has no choice.
Okay.
The baby has no choice at all. I mean, it's simply, it sounds like it's something that's just, you know, it has to be done. You know, but without his, I mean, he's too young to choose.
Okay, fine.
You know, what about the, I'm seeing online right now, they're talking about herpes. Is that another reason why you prefer to use, you know, like you said, a tube?
Yes, because if there's any doubt of any kind of medical threat to the child at all, then I would think that this would be the best way to go. Again, I'm telling you that there are certain people that don't want to change any procedure that has been done over the millennium, and that's their stance, and they say there have been no scientific proof that the herpes has been passed on.
Well, the baby has died. According
there's been no proof for how that baby died.
No proof at all.
Patients, there's been allegations, but no proof.
But has there, like, after the baby died, I mean, did they check the rabbi to see if he did in fact have the herpes virus, or?
I'm not sure. I don't know.
Because usually, I mean, I'm not trying to say there's any kind of pedophiles going around in the synagogue or anything like that at all. That's typically known in the Catholic Church.
We're going to continue on this one, then I'm going to just simply hang up.
Yeah, I think you should, because you had a baby's penis in your mouth.
There is absolutely no sexual overtones within this procedure, according to the traditional rabbis that perform it. Absolutely.
Sexual or not, you still had a baby's penis in your mouth. That's just disgusting.
Okay, have a pleasant day.
Yeah, you too.
And as far as... we're back here at the Church of Reality. You just heard part two of... Okay. Forgot to cut that off. I'm not a perfect editor. But as far as no proof, there has actually been more than one. There's been several children, babies, infants that died after contracting herpes from this sick, twisted procedure. There's been several cases of babies coming down with herpes who survived also. Mayor Bloomberg of New York City actually temporarily banned this from occurring, but the Orthodox Jews are rallying together to not only keep doing this sick, disgusting, perverted procedure, but to also not inform the parents of the potential herpes danger. Fuck that shit. Wow. Again, Elaine, this is a case of children, you know, they're babies, but they
that several babies did die just recently because of the herpes complex.
Yeah.
And I think it's sad. You know, I don't know what to say, but what do you think about the baby that had his little thing whacked off because he went to get circumcised a couple months ago or recently?
Yeah, I just heard about that. I believe you posted that earlier. And
I mean, can you imagine how traumatized this is going to be for that child?
That's horrible.
Yeah, I mean, you done took his whole life away. And then what makes it so bad, Prez, is that they did this. They cut the baby went in to be circumcised. And my computer went down, by the way. The baby went in to be circumcised. And they said it's going to take no more than 20 minutes, but it took them 3 hours later. The mother is still in there waiting for them to bring her baby back. And when they brought the baby back, what had happened was they didn't even tell her that they wiped the baby penis off. The mother takes the baby home, uncovers him, and see all this blood. And she looked down, you know, in his diaper, which was bloodied, and the baby little penis was gone.
You know, I
think this is horrific. This is right here in Tennessee, man. You know, and they didn't even have the audacity to tell the mother what they had done. They just sent the child home screaming.
That is disgusting. And those doctors, if that had been my child, I would Mussolini the doctor that did that to my child. I would cut his prick off and shove it down his throat and let him gag on it. Anybody that does that to a child needs a death sentence. That is just fucked up. And to these rabbis that want to continue to do this procedure and not tell the parents the risks of potential death by herpes, you guys are criminals. You are disgusting, filthy, sick criminals. You're not giving a child a chance to choose what he or she wants. But I'm sure there's plenty of children in their teens that get this same kind of sick, twisted treatment from some of these people. Oh, you fucking child molesters make me sick. But we had Mary Neal on the phone. Mary, if you can hear, call back in. I'll put you on the line. I know she's been waiting to come on. She's another surprise guest. I didn't know she was going to call in either. Our guest, Eugenie, who survived genocide, she just told me a few hours ago that she was going to call in. So we were fortunate enough to get that interview in. We're gonna go into another disgusting thing that happened to a man. Well, he was a boy at the time, named Michael Kelly. He's your friend, Elaine. We just did this show with him a couple months ago, and he went through the same thing that you went through. He was forcibly sterilized. Hearing his story, hearing that it happened to men as well, were you shocked, or did you already know that it happened to men as well?
Well, I knew that it happened to men because, you know what, in the state of North Carolina, this is how I learned that this happened in 2002. The state of North Carolina was sterilizing little boys and girls. They sterilized 2,999 children under the age of 19 years old. Little boys and little girls, they went in there and took the wounds out, or they did hatch jobs on their fallopian tubes, the uterus, or whatever. But I found out in 2002 that they were sterilizing little boys here in this country at the age of 6, 7, 8, 9, 10-year-old boys. Good Lord, can you imagine these people, what this government allowed to happen, gave the same thing as about this lady that was in her country. You know, I mean, the government, and as I said, the government are giving these people, doctors, permission to do these things to their citizens. And I don't know what kind of government we have or who's running these countries or, you know, if it's a group or if they're in it together or whatever, but it's something that somebody needs to stop. You know, we can't allow these governments to start, you know, to make these kind of decisions. These are crimes against humanity. And as I said before, you know, who's here to protect us?
We're playing God with people. If you believe in God, then you need to understand people that did, not to cut you off, Elaine, but if you really believe in a God and go to a church, no matter what religion it is, then you have to understand that these people are playing God with other people's lives. They are dictating whether these people have children or not. They are destroying potential families. You know, just think about that. If you got a family, let's say you're a man and a woman, and you got three children, okay? Just imagine if somebody had sterilized you when you were a young boy or a young girl, you wouldn't have those three kids. Just imagine.
I know. That happened to me.
It happened to my co-host. It happened to Elaine Riddick, who has been an advocate for this for years and years and years now. And I just want to commend you, Elaine, on your work for humanity, all of humanity, not just one race, not just one religion, not just one sex, for everything, everyone. And people who get shit twisted, you need to recognize reality. That's all I'm going to say about that. You know what I mean, Elaine. So
yeah.
Congratulations and salute to you on all the work and that you've done and all the accolades that come your way. You deserve every bit of it. And much love to you. Thank you for everything. Real talk. Well, here we go. We're going to play this interview with Michael Kelly from Australia about being sterilized. And we'll be right back here on the Church of Reality.
In Melbourne, it was quite routine for sterilization to go on for the unfit. I was born in 1961, and that was the year that the Eugenics Society of Victoria handed over all their material and allowed a university to continue this on from 1961. In 1972, I was presented to a Melbourne hospital because I was not of good stock, so to say. Now, my major problem as a youngster, and I was only 10 years old, was that I was too short. And shortness in boys was seen to be a disability. And more importantly, is a quote from the Eugenics Society of Victoria, and I'll quote it because it's very important. The general aim of the Eugenics Societies is therefore to bring about a state of affairs where persons of superior natural endowments shall have a higher, if not least lower, birth rate than persons of inferior endowments, and to ensure that the persons with gross defects of mind and body known to show a tendency to be inherited should be discouraged or prevented from producing children. And that's what happened to me as a 10-year-old in 1972.
How did they sterilize you? Was it medically? Did they through pill form, or what did they do?
No, well, there was two forms in actual fact. On April the 12th, 1972, I was put into a coma at the hospital, and what it was an insulin-induced coma, and what they were trying to do was measure growth hormone. Now, what they actually did was injected intravenously batches of pituitary hormone, and we know now that pituitary hormone is the causation of Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease. Now, of course, I don't have it, but I am at risk of it. Now, what actually happened was that it was contaminated. The hormone was contaminated with luteinizing hormone. And what it did was put my follicle-stimulating hormone up to the castration level of 1.8. And it increased my testosterone levels by sevenfold. And what that did was had a negative feedback on the hypothalamus and the adrenals to the testes. And of course I was chemically castrated, and the testes were out of place. And in fact, I was operated on 6 weeks later to find out what had happened to me. The left was found in the perineum muscle, and the right one had shot back up under the kidney. So they corrected the damage that had been done surgically. But of course, because of the damage, I wasn't going into puberty as a 12-year-old. So what they did was then gave me a 12-month course of anabolic steroids, which therefore sterilized me because it was prepubertal.
Oh, man. And
now, what happened after that, of course, was the side effects. The growth plates had prematurely maturated. So growth plates normally maturate at the age of 21. Mine were maturated at the age of 13 and a half years old. And very soon after, I was actually diagnosed with prostate disease because of that treatment.
Oh, man. You know, and the sad thing is, this has happened to thousands upon thousands of other people, and nobody's really being held accountable for it.
Well, here in Australia, we've got documented evidence that 466 males were done like this. Now, of the 466, 249 were either prepubescent or adolescent males. And these doctors went into a geriatric home in suburban Melbourne, and the rest were on ageing males.
Oh, that's just, it's just ridiculous that they would go to those lengths. And now you guys are obviously under rule by the Queen, so to speak. Has her, whatever you want to call it, her faction or whatever, debated about?
That's just part of our interview with Michael Kelly from episode 28 of The Church of Reality. Go UGSforLife.com and go to the archives and check out that entire episode to hear the rest of his very, very compelling interview. This is some 2020 shit here, Elaine. This is not by any means to be taken lightly, the shit that we're doing, you know.
I agree, you know, but, you know, what can we do? You know, Michael have been fighting for this for many, many years also. And, hello?
Yeah, I'm here.
No, and their government, I don't know what is going on, but, you know, he said that they were going somewhere, I don't know, understand their courts, but they're supposed to be looking into that, you know, so I just hope he have luck with it.
Yeah, and this happened to him many years ago, too, and you know.
But, you know, this type of thing here is really, you know, I know for a fact that it started over in Germany, you know, when they was doing this stuff, and you know, these are this type of mindset that this government, you know, that's doing this crap, man. You know, as I said, what kind of government are we living under? You know,
it
you
probably
think that America that this stuff wouldn't happen, but it's
sorry
happening.
Sorry to interrupt you. No, go ahead.
Hello?
I'm sorry. Yeah, you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you now.
Yeah, I'm sorry for interrupting you, but this stuff probably also happened thousands of years ago because they used to give people lobotomies. They used to do experiments on people years and years ago, too. So, and I bet you that's how this stuff is still going on today because they learn from the past, you know, but it's just worse now. I mean, that shit they're dropping on us from the planes over our heads, who knows what could be in that stuff.
I mean,
you know,
for real, and that's another thing, you know, all that aluminum and plastic and all that stuff, and what do you call it? It starts with a B.
Barium.
Yeah, man, you know, and I mean, and this stuff is killing, and even listen, with the fluoride in the water, these people are getting to be so bold,
yeah.
You know, I mean, and it's like, you know, it's like they don't care. I mean, they're just bold, but it's part of this I don't know if you want to call it the New World Order or part of the Illuminati's, the elites. It's just that they just want to kill off how many people?
6.5 billion.
Yeah, and then, you know, they are going by any means necessary. You're talking about castration and sterilization and all that stuff. You know, back in the day, not in my day, But, you know, during slavery, what a lot of people don't understand, this is how bold these people were. They would take these black women, and they would take them in a barn, and they didn't sterilize one woman at a time. It's the same thing that's going over in Africa, like when they go in there and they sew the woman's vagina up, or either they cut off her other part of her private area, I'm sorry. You know, I mean, this is, they used to take these women in barns. Like, you know, women in the neighborhood, like the lady was talking about using the machetes, they used to take these black women in barns here in America, and they didn't give them no type of anesthesia, and they used to cut them open right in the barn on the table. You know,
no anesthesia, antiseptic.
God. This is crazy, man. What kind of world do we live in? And where was the United Nations? I keep saying that. That's my new thing now.
Well, the United Nations is a front for global unity, which they're trying to show the world that, okay, we stick together and we stand by each other. But in reality, it's all a show. They don't stand by each other. They don't stick by each other. The rich stick with the rich, and the poor got to fend for themselves. And the haves against the have-nots. And
exactly.
That's who the government helps, the haves, not the have-nots.
Funny. But, you know, the whole idea is they're supposed to be there to protect human rights. They're supposed to be there to protect
humans
from being, you know, therefore crimes against humanity. Supposed to be there to prevent these things. So what do we need them for? If they are allowing all this stuff to go on in all these different countries.
Yeah, exactly. You know, what do we need them for if they're not going to help us and protect us?
And that's what they're
doing. What do we need them for if they're going to kill us? You know, they're killing
probably
people.
Happening.
They're killing people in record numbers. You know,
and people need to wake up and realize what's going on in the world, that it's not, I mean, these things are happening at home. And you know what I like, prayers, about your show, about our show?
Our show.
Yeah. You know what I like this? It's because it is informative. It's very educational, you know, and people need to start jumping in and listening. You know, and you know, I mean, you don't have to go and read a book. I mean, knowledge is easy now. All you got to do is just go on the internet and participate in what's going on. You know, the more participate, the more we can fix these problems.
Yeah.
You know, and
you just got to open your eyes and put down your stupid fucking phone for a minute and turn off that dumb television show you're watching. And untie those $200 pair of Jordans you're wearing, and pay fucking attention to what's going on in the world.
Yeah,
you know,
now they're being mesmerized by the TV, where the
TV is
doing what to you now? It's what is that thing that they're doing now through the TV prayers?
Voice
when
recognition
they are...
and facial recognition, biometrics. They can, like, if you turn on your TV, if you have one of those smart TVs, someone can hack into it and look right into your living room and see everybody in the living room.
And they're using mind control.
Mind control, yeah. The idiot box, that's what they call it, the idiot box.
So, you know, they the things that your kids are watching on TV, the things that we look at, they're sitting there manipulating us, controlling us, through the TV, and we're so stupid. I mean, hey, wake up, folks.
Yeah, real shit.
Who's going to be exposed next?
Well, next we're going to go to the Mormon Church real quick. This was done way back on, episode had to have been close to the beginning. That was Pentecostal. Episode 3. We actually had an elder, former elder of the Mormon Church, who was did the same ritual that Mitt Romney did. This was before the last election. We were talking about Mitt Romney and how crazy and goofy he is, along with the Mormon religion. And this is coming from a guy who was in the church for 40-plus years. This is not coming from some outsider like myself. This is coming from a guy that was in there. So check out this interview, and we'll be back on episode 33, The Best of the Church Reality, Part 1. We know Obama's connection to Wall Street, and we just heard, you know, that Mitt has very high, powerful connections as well. What could happen to us as a nation if this guy gets elected?
You mean if Romney gets elected?
Yes, Romney.
Well, I tell you, I'm not really in the prophecy business. I gave that up a long time ago. But I think it's kind of scary because he's one thing that a lot of people don't know about Romney is that when he was being an active Mormon and a devout Mormon and a former Mormon missionary, he went through a ritual in the Mormon temple that all good Mormon, adult Mormons go through when they become adult or when they get married. It's called the endowment ceremony. It's the ceremony that Joseph Smith ripped off from the Freemasons. But it's a very important ceremony. And during that, it's kind of an initiation ceremony, but it's secret. Nobody is supposed to know about it. Nobody is supposed to talk about it. As a matter of fact, at the time that Romney and I went through this ceremony, we agreed that if we were to reveal the secrets of the ceremony, our lives would be forfeit. And we mimicked the taking of our own life as a penalty if we were to reveal the secrets. A part of this initiation ceremony is the taking of several oaths. You promise or covenant to do certain things. And one of the most scary, there are five altogether, one of the most scary ones in relationship to Romney is the oath to obey the law of consecration. And what that means is, the oath is that if called upon, you will consecrate everything with which God has blessed you, your life, your assets, your time, whatever God may bless you with, you will consecrate it to the Mormon Church for the upbuilding of the kingdom of God on earth. Now, that is a scary kind of oath to take. If Romney were to be elected, you have to ask yourself, how would Romney view the presidency in light of this oath of consecration? Would he view the presidency as something that God had blessed him with? Of course he would say, oh sure, you know, the voters elected me, but how did it happen that the voters elected me? It's because God wanted me to be president. And so, according to the oath I took during the endowment ceremony, I am supposed to use this blessing of the presidency of the United States for the upbuilding of the Mormon Church.
This is definitely mind-blowing. I want to back up just a few steps.
Sure.
You pretty much just exposed a secret ceremony.
That's right.
Is there anything you can tell me any more that you can elaborate on this ceremony, like what you had to go through or what a lot of these Mormons have to go through?
Right, right. It's as a matter of fact, if you copy down my website, there is an article on my website that explains the whole thing. It's the article called Temples, Mormon Temples and the Mormon Temple Rituals. The whole thing is, there are several other rituals like the baptism for the dead by proxy and the sealing of man and wife in marriage, but the endowment is the principal one. and they are all very secret. Of course, they haven't been secret since the days of Nauvoo, because there have always been people that are leaving the church that are willing to tell about it. So the Mormons think it's...
That was episode 3, Church Reality. Go back, listen to the entire episode. He dropped a lot of shocking revelations about the Mormon church. Yeah, this is crazy. This is like the show, this is like the old TV show In Search Of. You never know what you're going to get. And I'll tell you what, if any of you motherfuckers out there have seen Bigfoot, I want to hear about it. Get at me, Prez, at UGSForLife.com. If you've seen ghosts, you know, we're going to, I want to tap into the paranormal. I want to tap into the crazy shit, too. I mean, we're open to whatever, right, Lane?
Oh, yeah.
Basically, we're pretty well, you know what I'm saying, we're pretty well done here. I might play a couple more audio clips and get off. I know you probably, you want to hit the bed. I know you got to be tired. You're always putting in work. Is there any closing statements you want to make, Elaine?
Well, let me see.
It sounds like we're in court. Do you have any closing statements?
I think, you want me to close? I just want people to realize, I want people to think about the trafficking of the kids. You know, there's 800,000 children go missing a year. Prayers, 800,000 children go missing a year. We don't know about this stuff. 2,000 kids a day. I forgot how many it was. They're being kidnapped. Stolen every 40 seconds. A child is being stolen, you know, and, this is what else I want to talk about. This is interesting, that the human trafficking is a trade in humans, most commonly for the purpose of sexual slavery, forced labor, or for the extraction of organs or tissues, including surrogacy and ovary removal. This is like a $32 billion a year international trade.
Oh, this is sickening.
This
sickening.
Is worse.
As a parent, as you know, people that have children in your family, you've got to keep them close. Don't let them out of your sights for 1 minute, because there's you never know who's watching you guys, knowing your every move. That's what scares me. You could have somebody tailing you, watching your every move. You know, when you pick up your kid from school, when you take your kid here, take your kid there, and they're just waiting for you. That's why with me, I try to leave as little opportunity as possible. Some people might say, you know what, you're overprotective, you're keeping your kid in a bubble. No, I say I'm keeping my kid alive. I'm keeping my kid away from that shit.
Oh,
so
yeah,
call me what you want to, people, because I'm not a overbearing father. I'm just an overcaring father. And that's how all fathers should be, all mothers should be. You know, yes. We're going to, I'll tell you what, let's get off into Melissa's segment and play. She's been on the show more than once. First time she came on the show was way back at episode 8. And this is a little clip from that episode. This is her story. Check it out. Before we get into your organization, what made you... you became a sex slave, am I not correct?
That's correct. I was a trafficking victim.
And how did you become a victim of human trafficking?
Well, a close family member, by the time I was 4, began molesting me and grooming me to be sold. And then by the time I was 10, I began being passed around in bars in Dallas, Fort Worth, Texas. And from there, yanked out later from school for kind of squilling and transferred. And when the truancy officers came looking for me, and my family member had a debt, a gambling debt they couldn't pay, Then I was sold to an underground sex trafficking ring where I was literally held almost 18 hours a day in chains. I was, and the rest of the hours was performing for, you know, anywhere from 5 to 30 men a night.
Five,
this all happened.
God.
13.
Wow.
So that was all, like I said, the time before I was 13. And then one night a customer, a John, is what we call him, had come in and bought me for the, you know, hour that he was supposed to have me, and basically set me on fire. That was his fantasy, was to see a child burn to death. And after that, I was just left in a garbage can to die. Ended up spending a year in the hospital, and praise God, I lived through it. But spent a year in the hospital, getting reconstructive surgeries, had over 30 surgeries just to repair me to be a woman. And then the night before I was to be released from the hospital, I took off running. But again, how does a 14-year-old now survive on the cold streets of Dallas, Texas? And so I quickly hooked back up with another pimp, thinking that he was going to save me, you know, and rescue me, and he was going to keep me good, but he was just the same. And that began the whole process until I was 17 when he got locked up on different charges and trafficking, because back then there really wasn't a law against selling or buying children per se, because it wasn't something that was really well known, where nowadays it's very much more in your face and present if we simply go onto the internet and look. And spent my whole life addicted to heroin and booze, and took a downward spiral until at 27, my 5-year-old daughter led me to the Lord. And he's been working with me and preparing me and healing me and transforming me. And from that, he birthed inside of me a dream that I didn't want to take on, and that was to go back and set the captives free. And I can tell you, I didn't want to do that. I you know, was moving on. I had my family together, and I just didn't want to look backwards. But I did, and after wrestling with it for a year and a half, and it was the best decision ever made. It's truly blessed my life, and so I'm very, very fortunate that my pain was not in vain, but it's helping other children.
Well, I tell you what, here in the Church of Reality, you know, me and my co-host, Brother Herod, we don't belong to any faith in particular, but when it comes to things of this nature, we find common ground with those. You could be Muslim, you could be Jewish, you could be atheist. What you're doing, I got to commend you for it. I really do. I got nothing but respect for what you're doing, and I really appreciate you coming on our show to share the experiences, the awful experiences that you've had to go through.
Well, thank you for having me.
That was Melissa from ForTheSakeOf1.org. That was episode 8. Go check that out. And she was on a few of the other shows. Check out the archive at UGSForLife.com. We covered pretty much everything tonight, Elaine. I don't know how we got through it all, but just we covered everything from just awful slaughtering, genocide, to sexual abuse. I mean, just you name it. But we're going to get out of here. Thank you for co-hosting this with me again. Appreciate you. I'm going to leave the listeners with a song, Kayreno Operation Genocide, because that's exactly what this is all about. So take care. We'll see you guys next week. Hopefully we'll have the Fuck the Police episode. And then the week after that, we're going to have an episode about men's rights. That should be very interesting. Yeah, I figure I'd get a laugh out of you. But we're going to have an episode about men's rights, but before that, we're going to have the episode about the police. You know, police brutality is at an all-time high. They don't care anymore. They used to try to hide the beatings and the assaults as best as they could and cover them up, but now they're being filmed. Their videos are on YouTube. The mainstream media isn't doing much about it, but we could see it. Just look for it on YouTube or look for it in your local neighborhood. It's there. Every day you're going to see somebody getting roughed up by the police, and sometimes it causes people's lives to be lost. So we're gonna do that episode soon. So just, you know, keep messing with us. You know, thanks for tuning in. Thanks, Elaine, for everything. Keep doing what you do, and we'll get at you guys real soon.
Peace. You're welcome.
You are tuned into the Murder Master Music Show at UGSforLife.com.
We're not gonna never stop. Operation Genocide. The murderers will soon be identified. Time and what must be done. You got planes in the sky while you watching the ground. White lines they releasing, dropping chemicals down. Food too consuming, loaded up with GMOs. More laws that take your rights away will be imposed. Online posts got you under cyber attack. Now you label the terrorists under the Privacy Act. Phone and internet activity spying on that. Now everybody's finding out what it's like to be black. You think America's free? Sorry, you're wrong, dude. FDA trying to keep you from planting your own food. No convo, game monopolized by Monsanto. No use trying to reproduce the seeds cause they won't grow. Now you gotta keep buying the profit enormous. Cheating people and making money off of the farmers. Experimenting with dangerous poison to harm us. Anything pure and organic, they taking it from us. Satan on a mission daily to see what he can plot up. Every 2 or 3 months, something getting bombed or shot up. Some say that the world's going crazy and backwards. Some say it's all staged and the victims are actors. The schemes and the lies, the subliminal cruelty. The clues be usually hidden in movies. They show you what they plan to do to trick and confuse us. Hollywood is full of ruthless, perverted producers. Sit up in the offices designing the evil, negatively influencing the minds of the people. Our male role models gain false successes. Soon as they start blowing up, they put them in dresses. It's money for your manhood, companies scaring them. And now even these punk-ass rappers is wearing them on the strongest. World entities, we place the owners. A sports stadium is more important than the homeless. For the longest, no remorse or atonement. One of the biggest tricks is degrees and diplomas. Wars get started cause the government's greedy. Truth being overshadowed by reality TV. America been murdering for centuries easy. From disease and the Indians all the way to Tuskegee. So now murderous games cover a wide range. From the immunizations that they shooting your child's veins. To the flu shot that you got. The fake food chains. The synthetic marijuana you're smoking killing your brain. A catalog of pills contributes to the economy. The dope house in the hood ain't got nothing on the pharmacy. 1500 militias mad and ornery. Ready for war, weapons and guns in the armory. A chance to assassinate the president they wait for. Other stockpiling ammunition for a race war. The wicked chemists still practicing racist eugenics. Babies murdered in minutes at Planned Parenthood clinics. No money or resources reinforces the fear. Now we seeing 300,000 abortions a year. How much is your money really worth? Let's observe facts. Go look up the Federal Reserve Act, research that. The United States debt grew exponentially from $1 billion to $12 trillion in less than a century. The dollar used to be backed by silver and gold. Now it's in rapid decline, no value it holds. The stimulus package is an economical trap. But they don't tell you that the dollar's weak and gonna collapse. Not to mention God is mad, so he acts with aggression. Bringing storms down for centuries of death and oppression. You say it's random acts of nature, but I call that the question. Cause the scripture breaks down what America's destined for. And it's much more famine and war. A tornado in your living room is hard to ignore. You got America, Israel, Europe combined. You've never seen as much evil in the world at one time. How did the whole planet get fooled without a clue? Millions of people controlled and ruled by a few. They got mad at Snowden for telling what he knew. Because they don't want other countries to do what